This is the Missing People Podcast. I'm Steve Branham. Welcome to the second part of Kelly's interview with Glendine Grant, mother of missing Jesse Foster. Their conversation continues.
We are back with part two of our interview with Glendine Grant. She is the mother of missing Jessica Foster, who has been missing since the end of March 2006 from Las Vegas, Nevada. Welcome back, Glendine.
Thank you. I'm very glad to be back. I'm glad that I'm here. I appreciate this.
Well, we know that sharing these stories is definitely not an easy thing. It's such a life-changing, life-altering event to have to go through this and not know where someone that you love so dearly, not know where they are and what has become of them. Now, in Jessica's case, as we've been talking about, it's suspected that she is a victim of human trafficking. And you mentioned cities that were the hub and having some thought process that's what has happened. What more have you learned about human trafficking? Do they have some idea of where she may have been taken to know where to look? How does that work?
That's the puzzling part. We don't know where she's been taken or, you know, where to look for Jesse. But we have found out a lot of things. I mean, the people that we believe she's involved in, we found many houses all over the United States that need to be investigated. I mean, how can people with no legitimate job, no legal source of income, how can they own houses all over the United States? I've read articles about other people in Las Vegas who went through the same type of thing, and they've been arrested. They've gone to jail for money laundering, for pimping, for soliciting prostitution. And I know of other people who are doing the same thing, and they've just, the investigation is just not focused on them. We know of houses. I've talked to other people who are involved with these people. I just don't know. I get so confused. Maybe it's just my small town mentality, but as far as I'm concerned, when this kind of information is available, and we're talking 14 months later, and I still don't even know if those other houses have had an officer knock on the front door and say, you know, what's going on here? Like, I just don't understand it. I mean, I'm ready to go down to all these other, cities and knock on the doors myself. You know, it's just, I just thank God that Atlas has now gotten involved, because that's, to me, the only thing that, it saved me. It saved me from feeling like I had to now start knocking on these doors, because finally someone else is looking at it the same way I am and, you know, taking this investigation more seriously.
Now, if you would state again on the second part, you just mentioned that someone got involved to take the pressure of investigation off of you, which it, of course, shouldn't be on. Can you tell us about that person or group again?
I have a fellow that's been helping us. He's a bounty hunter. He read the story about Jesse in the Las Vegas City Life that came out February 2nd by Matt O'Brien. It was a huge article. It's 5 pages long, 4,000 words. And we've gotten a lot of phone calls and emails from people in Las Vegas after that article came out. This fellow contacted me. He's a bounty hunter. And he's been doing a lot of investigation with us since that first contact. He's been working with another woman who is doing checks on different residents, and he goes and talks to people who have contacted us, and he's gotten more results, in my opinion, than other people that have helped us and have been working on this case. I don't know if it's because, you know, he doesn't have to follow the same guidelines as officers do, but he has got us information that we have passed on to the police that the police have checked into a little further. I'm so grateful for this person. I've offered to help him with any expenses, to pay him. He's turned down money. He won't take any kind of payment. He said he's offered to do this for us pro bono, and he's going to continue to do this pro bono for us. And I just think it's just wonderful. He's been of a great help to me.
Well, that is good. It's always good to have an angel, so to speak, like that on your side, helping you with something like that, and especially someone that's there where you aren't. Now, haven't you made several trips to Las Vegas, and what was the purpose of those trips? What did you accomplish?
Well, at first I didn't even want to go. my opinion, when people would say, oh, have you gone down there? I would say I'm not going to Las Vegas. It would be a waste of money. What could I do down there that the private investigators can't do? And that was my opinion from March until October. When finally people would say, oh, well, you know, you could go down there and talk to media. You could, and I started thinking that, you know, that I'm really just a voice on the phone and an email that pops into the officer's inbox once in a while, and I better get down there. I better let them see us and meet us as people and make sure that Jesse's name is out there and that people are hearing about it. And that's what got me to go down there on the first trip. And I went down there and I handed out posters and I talked to media, and it was, I felt that it was a very good result, you know, talk to the officers. And then in January, just because Father and I, we talked it over and we thought, well, we're going to go down there again, do the same thing. This time we wanted to talk to the Crime Stoppers because we didn't meet them the first time. And Global TV from Canada, the national news, decided that they were going to send a team down there also, and they followed us around and did a huge story on Jessica and being missing down there. And so that was part of our trip for January. Went down there for about a week, met up with North Las Vegas, Crime Stoppers, you know, several different media. Went again, like we've done every time, to the mayor, to the governor. We just want to make sure everybody just keeps remembering about us. And then in April, I went down to New York for a taping of the Montel Williams show. It was a show about human trafficking. It was an awesome experience to meet people who are victims and survivors of human trafficking. And then I went to go down there again at the end of May, and I got turned around at the border. They wouldn't let me cross. They said that I'm not able to cross the border because I do have a record from 1986. And I tried to say, well, that record has been there since, you know, before I went down to Las Vegas the first time. They said, well, we're still sorry. We're holding that against you this time. And then she proceeded to tell me that if Jessica hadn't chosen to go down to Las Vegas, then nothing would have happened. So therefore, she made her own choice and literally blamed Jesse for everything that's happened to her. It's been terrible, but I don't think she realized that, you know, Jessica's case up in Canada, especially in Western Canada, it's got quite a bit of media. And, you know, as soon as this happened, it's been on the news, it's been on the radio, it's been in the paper, and, you know, CTV News is doing a story, and this poor woman, I don't know what she's gone through, because, I mean, I've talked to the head of U.S. Customs in Chicago, and all kinds of things have happened because of this. I still have to get a waiver and fill in a few forms before I can go back down there, but definitely it's caused a little bit more media attention just because of the fact that I was turned away after several visits that I've already made down there.
Well, and let's hope that that woman came to have an understanding about what we're going through.
Exactly.
So that something like that isn't said to another family of the missing again.
You don't ever even insinuate that somebody caused their own disappearance. It's not right. You can't presume to know anything. She doesn't know anything about her story, what we've gone through, and even if she was close to being right, it's still not something you would ever say to the mother.
Absolutely not. Now, you have, or friends or relatives have developed a couple of websites for Jessica, and
yes.
One of those is jessiefoster.ca, and then the other one, I believe, is findjessicafoster.com. Were those developed by friends and family or relatives, and what do we find there on those websites that can help?
Well, the jessiefoster.ca was done by a very good friend of ours, and it's been paid for by her boyfriend, who is the owner of Comstech Electric, who is my husband's boss. He became my husband's boss after Jesse disappeared. And the reason that he hired Jim was because Jim worked for a company that he was out of town working Monday to Friday on the road. And it was getting very hard for me and for my family to have him not here when we were going through all this. So this friend of ours had owned his electrical company for 20 years, and he created a position for Jim and hired him. started hosting the website, and his girlfriend designed it and built it and has done everything for it. We provide her with all the information, any updates, she adds them instantly, and it's just amazing. We've had well over 20,000 hits on that now. The other website was done by a fellow who I just got his contact information after Jesse disappeared, because years ago he went through a similar situation with a daughter. He's built that other site and has hosted it, and it's just amazing. You can find all of our media information are on the site, especially the jessefoster.ca. That's the most updated one. It talks about our fundraisers. It's got pictures of Jesse, as a grown woman, all of her school portraits, family pictures from when she was little. It's just got everything. It talks about her interests, her favorite foods, and her likes. It's just a wonderful website and very informative and updated all the time. So anybody that wants any information or wants to print posters, they can do all of that from that website. And speaking of printable posters, we do have them available also in English, French, Spanish, and in Dutch. We've had them translated into those other languages for people in other parts of the world.
Well, that sounds like that's very helpful, and I'm glad that other folks have stepped up to help in the search for Jessica. And yes, we would certainly encourage them to go to the jessefoster.ca website and take a look at the available information and print those posters and get them put out. Now, yes. Since you've had such a life-changing experience and you've learned things that you didn't imagine that you would learn about human trafficking and these sorts of things that go on beyond our doors, do you have a message for young women today who are striking out on their own, just like Jessica was over a year ago, about personal safety?
Well, a couple of things I would say. It is something that I even said to Jesse at the beginning of this. She didn't take enough. She didn't heed my advice. I didn't even know that it was actually advice. I was just telling her, people don't always do things for nothing. Somebody was offering to take you on these trips. They were wonderful. They told you no strings attached. You believe them. I questioned it. I'm older. You could say wiser. Some people may not think so. But it's one of those things that I just didn't have a very good feeling. I thought, if it looks too good to be true, it probably is. This was a wonderful opportunity for Jesse to travel. However, you're talking about a fellow who said he didn't want to, take advantage of her. He was doing it just so he could have somebody to travel with as a companion. And I just thought that just didn't sound right. And in the end, it turns out that he may very well have been a recruiter, and that he may very well have took Jesse on these trips for one of two reasons. One may have been to let her see how nice it was if you had money. Maybe let her see what kind of trip she could go on somebody else's expense. Or maybe at the end of it all, they just handed her an IOU, which is what I said to Jesse at the end. How do you know he's not going to say, you owe me for this trip? She said, because he told me there was no strings attached. And I said, there's always something. I still can't believe that, I had these bad feelings. I said to Jesse when she got to Las Vegas and told me she was going to stay there, my words to her haunt me. I said to Jesse, what if something happens to you down there? I have your cell number and no one else. I have no other contact. If anything happened to you, if you went missing, who would I call? And she gave me another girl's phone number and said, this is my friend Yvonne. I'm staying at Yvonne's house. And 10 months later, she went missing. And it haunts me today that I said those words to her. And maybe actually it was good. Maybe it made Jesse know right from the beginning. As soon as she went missing, she probably thought, my mom's going to know I'm missing, because she knows that it was a concern.
You were being a loving mom at that point. And we can hope that perhaps some young listeners for the program will definitely think about what they're doing in their lives in case that they are interacting with someone who may not have their best interests in mind. Mm-hmm. Now, with your other daughters, do they do anything different in their lives now from a safety standpoint?
Right now, all of my other daughters, my adult daughters and my teenagers, they all live at home with me. They've all moved back home. I've got boyfriends living here. We've got a house full of people. I've got a couple of girls who are like foster sisters to Jesse who are living here. Our house is fuller than it's ever been. And yes, we do a few things that are different. For one, everybody always knows what everybody's doing. We don't go anywhere. I don't care if it's my 24-year-old daughter. If she's going to go somewhere, she lets somebody know before she walks out the door. My youngest daughter has given me passwords to her email accounts and her MySpace accounts because she wants me to be able to have access because she said if anything ever happens, actually what she said to me is, Mom, I know it will never happen, but if I ever go missing, I know you'll find me. And then she gave me the biggest hug and I felt very successful as a mom at that point because I felt that my 17-year-old daughter knew that nothing would stop me. I've had my kids tell me, you know, Mom, you've got three other kids. They're all right here. And you spend 24 hours a day, 7 days a week concerned with Jesse. And I look at them and I say, and you're right. And I know that. And I'm looking at you while I tell you that. And I haven't looked in Jesse's eyes for how long? Jesse hasn't heard our voices. Jesse needs me to spend this time on her. And then again, after this is over, we have the rest of our lives. In the meantime, we're all together. We're under a roof. I'm here anytime you want to talk to me. I may be like now, not available because I'm on the phone. I may be at other times typing out emails or reading things. But we're always in the same home together, all my children and I. And I try to let them know that I love them and I would never turn my back on them. But right now, Jesse needs me the most.
When are you planning on going back to Las Vegas again?
As soon as anybody can help me get a waiver to get across that border. And I'm just finding out today that right now Canada, the United States does not need passports to get into Canada and Mexico. And I'm thinking, then why in the world do we need passports to get into the United States? I'm thinking that maybe something with the change and what's just happened with that, there may be some kind of glitch that's going to help me. Maybe the U.S. Customs and Border Protection people that I help to might allow me to get through. I could get, you know, I have people who live in Las Vegas who are willing to sponsor me as a visitor. But all that aside, if none of that works, then what it's going to do, it's going to take me almost $300 and up to 6 months to apply for a waiver. And that's a waiver which would be a pardon of sorts where the U.S. Customs will allow me to come back into the United States. So without that or without them allowing me to, without any other reason such as humanitarian pardon, that they can just sign one of those in just a moment, I have no idea when my next time will be down there. I just unpacked my suitcases yesterday. They'd been packed for a week, and I thought I'm not unpacking them because I plan on going right back down there. But then it looked like that might not be happening so quick. So I unpack my things, and I'm ready to go anytime somebody tells me that they'll allow me.
Well, hopefully that'll happen real soon for you. But part of the reason why I brought that up was because we recently did some podcast DNA training for law enforcement in which we emphasized just as much as we possibly can about the importance of all families of the missing giving DNA samples to get their DNA into CODIS, the National DNA Database, to be compared against, we hope it doesn't happen, obviously, but unidentified human remains that have been found. And so if you go down to, or the next time you go to Las Vegas, the Las Vegas police can do that for you for free, and we do discuss that on the law enforcement briefing side of our website on the podcast audio training files there. So I definitely encourage you to get that done. Were you not aware of that?
I was, and I was aware of it from your email that you sent out. I sent that that form out to our officers that were in the law enforcement. I don't know if they contacted you about any of that training or what. And I have actually asked them more than once if they could take my DNA to keep it on file, and it's never been done. I asked them that when I was down there in January, and it was not done. And so I'm not sure if I, you know, if I can insist on it or what, but they have not taken my DNA.
It's so simple to do. It would only take them less than 10 minutes, and it's free. And if they would just get in contact with the Center for Human Identification, they'll arrange to send them a kit or kits, if any of her sisters happen to be with you, to do the DNA, or actually one for her father as well. So there really isn't any reason for that not to take place. And I encourage you to check with them again about that.
I will. I will. That is something that I have. It has been, upfront to me. I mean, I could say hopefully it's never necessary, but it needs to be there. I mean, we have had one other situation where we were only called because they didn't want us to hear about it through the media. So we got a call last year, probably early summer, telling us that two young women had been found in the desert, and we had to wait for an autopsy to come back to see if it was Jessica. And it did take a couple of days before we found out that, thank God, it wasn't. But it was a really hard couple of days, obviously. I would have preferred that they didn't call us at all, but we did hear about it through two other people about these girls. So I was actually grateful in the long run that I did know about it, and I didn't, worry any more than I did.
Do they have fingerprints on file for her also?
That actually they would. They would have them on file because she was arrested. But if something happened to Jessica when this happened, my thoughts, it's hard for me to even go there, but the fact is there won't be any fingerprints because it's been 14 months. And if she was murdered 14 months ago, then there won't be anything for them to get fingerprints from.
No, and that's true, and you're absolutely right. It's a very hard place to go to. But they do have the dental, so that's good, although sometimes there are times that doesn't work, and so they need the DNA. It's so important. And what would you say has been your main source of support? What gets you through each day, waking up and not being able to wake up and see that lovely smile?
My biggest thing that keeps me going is my family and my closest friends. They're always there. They put up with me whether I make supper one night or not the next, whether laundry gets done or doesn't, whether I sat in my room for the entire day on the computer. They're just there 100%, always, always there. And another thing that gets me through every single day, knowing that if I didn't look for Jesse every minute, then there would be minutes where somebody wasn't looking for her. Because as much as the police work on her case is not consuming somebody 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. With me, it's daily, it's minute. I'm always checking emails, looking for news sites, always doing something. So Jesse's case is, it's being investigated constantly, not just when the police open her file. And that keeps me going to know that, and I've been told this by the police, that Jesse's biggest investigator on her case is me. And and that's the way it's going to be. Until there's someone else that can take up what I do and do it as much as me and as often as I'm on the computer or contacting people, then I'm going to continue to do it.
And you are definitely her champion, and your love for her is so, so evident. And like I said before, you've done a tremendous job, even from the beginning, because, as we always say, you don't know what to do when this happens. No one hands you a manual with the step-by-step instructions on what to do and who to call. And so you've really done an excellent job of continuing to get the word out about her story and not letting her be forgotten, in the hopes that one of those activities, one of those stories, may be the one that finds her.
That's right. And, Kelly, I do think that maybe when this is done, or even before this is done, maybe I think I will write that manual. Maybe it's about time that somebody did have something available for people that they could start with, the first initial report to the police and then all the different missing persons websites and the media attention. It didn't take anything extra special. I had no knowledge. I just got one list from one person, and I carried on from there. Once I thought about, well, if I contacted that person, why shouldn't I contact these people? And once I did that, it just kept going. I'm very computer literate, so it was great. Everybody knows somebody who has a computer, who's good on the computer. Everybody knows at least one person, and that's all that you need. You just need one person that has access to a computer that is willing to sit there and contact, you know, Google missing persons, Google media, Google law enforcement, and then contact every single person that comes up on those lists. And that's basically how I started. So there's always more for me to do.
Well, I personally have high hopes that one of these days that you're going to hear those words from her, thank you, Mom, you never gave up on me.
I pray for that day, Kelly, and I know myself it's coming. I know. I mean, we've gone 14 months, and if it takes us 5 years to find Jesse, we'll keep going for 5 years. Until somebody tells me Jesse does not want to come home, and here's proof that Jesse is brought home or that Jesse is proven that she's not alive, then I will stop my search. But one of those three things has to happen.
And we will keep hoping and praying. And again, we encourage our listeners to go to the website jessefoster.ca, download posters, read information. Thank you, Glenn Dean, for spending your time with us today and sharing the story of your very lovely daughter. And we hope that this helps in some small way.
Well, thank you, Kelly. I appreciate it, and I'm sure it will.
This concludes Kelly's interview with Glenn Dean Grant. For more information about Jesse, please go to jessefoster.ca. Again, that's jessefoster.ca. If you have any information about Jesse Foster, please contact Detective Dave Molnar with the North Las Vegas Police Department at 702-633-1779. You're listening to the Missing People Podcast, copyright 2007, all rights reserved and held jointly by the Missing People Podcast and Project Jason. Original music created and performed by Ariana Kima. For more information on Project Jason, please go to projectjason.org. For my co-host, Kelly Jolkowski, I'm Steve Branham with the Missing People Podcast. Thank you for listening.